Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. How are young LGBTQ people coping with COVID-19, especially as so many students continue to attend school virtually from home or their dorm rooms? When schools and colleges closed in the spring, many queer youth lost access to supportive friends, social networks, and school services. Some found themselves back home with families who are unsupportive or even hostile to their sexual orientation or gender identity. And like many of us, queer youth are also dealing with stress related to unemployment, homelessness, divisive politics, racism, health concerns, wildfires, and other climate calamities. The list goes on and on. Even before COVID-19 hit, queer young people were known to be at higher risk than their hetero peers for depression, anxiety, and other serious mental health issues. In April, the Trevor Project, the world's largest suicide and crisis intervention organization for LGBTQ youth, reported that calls to its hotline had more than doubled under shelter-in-place orders. This summer, the Trevor Project released results of its 2020 national survey on LGBTQ youth mental health. It found that 40% of respondents had seriously considered suicide in the past year, and nearly 70% reported symptoms of generalized anxiety, both highly concerning statistics in the midst of a pandemic. As many schools and colleges extend virtual learning into next spring, and mental health providers and nonprofits find themselves increasingly stretched thin, what support exists now to help queer youth through this pandemic? If this sounds familiar, I spoke with three experts about this on Out in the Bay in August, and we got a lot of response to that episode. As the situation, unfortunately, continues, we thought it important to air this conversation again. Please share it widely with any young people who you think may be struggling, and with parents, caregivers, partners, and friends of queer youth. If you or someone you know needs help, there are phone numbers and resource links on our site, outinthebay.org, and in this half hour. Joining me to discuss this and more are Rain Bannock, an associate marriage and family therapist working in the East Bay who specializes in treating members of the LGBTQ plus community. Rain also leads the weekly Loud, Loving Ourselves and Uniting Diversity After School Youth Program at the Pacific Center for Human Growth in Berkeley. Welcome, Rain.
Thank you for having me.
Devin Green is volunteer coordinator at the LGBT National Help Center. Devin's role involves crisis call taking, designing training materials, teaching new volunteers how to operate the organization's peer support hotlines, and supervising and supporting the volunteers. Welcome, Devin.
Thank you.
And Mauro Cifuentes is an educator for LGBTQ plus justice and LGBTQ programs coordinator at the San Francisco Unified School District. Welcome, Mauro.
Thank you so much for having me. Really, really grateful to be here.
So, Mauro, you're the LGBTQ programs coordinator for the San Francisco Unified School District, which provides a variety of queer student services, including affinity and ally spaces and Q groups. These are confidential groups that support healthy and positive identity development. What have you been hearing from your students, especially your queer students, since the beginning of the pandemic? What effect is COVID-19 having on them?
Yeah, these are really important questions. And, you know, as someone who works directly with youth, primarily youth in middle school and high school, I've been hearing a lot of different things, and it has kind of run the gamut all the way from some students who are really used to hearing and experiencing harassment in schools, who are now at home and have a little bit of space from that ongoing daily harassment, all the way to students who experience schools as sort of their safe haven, you know, in comparison to their homes that may be, you know, homophobic or transphobic. And so we're seeing kind of the full spectrum of experiences, and it's really individualized. However, what I can say that cuts across most of the young people that I've talked to is that they really miss their friends, you know, and LGBTQ youth in particular are really missing that peer engagement. Some of them are continuing to engage with their peers virtually through group hangouts, or they're watching Netflix shows together with that new feature where you can sort of sync up what you're viewing. You know, some of them are reaching out to their virtual networks even more, so connecting with young people all over the place who they may not know live in person. So, you know, they're adapting, But there is a subset of them that we were most concerned about prior to COVID, you know, the ones who are both experiencing harm at school and are not safe at home, who are the ones that we're most concerned with. And they're actually the young people who are actually most difficult to reach out to and connect with in this moment.
Yeah, it seems like for any young person at this time, it must be difficult because that's that age, you know, teenage years, young adult years, early 20s, where you just naturally want to be more social and be, you know, dating or whatever. So I think it's, although it's difficult for all of us, it seems even more difficult. Rain, you provide both individual therapy sessions and you work as a facilitator for this weekly youth group at the Pacific Center. Even before the pandemic, queer youth had been found to be a significant increased risk for depression, anxiety, substance use, and suicidal thoughts or actions. And the increased risk is even more pronounced among transgender or non-binary youth. So I'm curious, what are kids in general across the board dealing with now? And what stressors now are specific to queer youth are you finding?
Yeah, so sort of echoing some of what Mauro was talking about was the removal of social networks has made a profound impact and sort of exacerbated what was already existing. Our youth group is largely a social support group. So we're seeing kids drop off that wouldn't have otherwise because of lack of access to technology or parental monitoring of use of technology, you can only use this for school sort of thing. And specific to queer youth, I think, is that aspect of feeling very misunderstood. Again, like Mauro was saying, some of them, the home environment is just not safe. Even for folks who have parents and family members who are accepting of their identity, they often don't, quote unquote, get it. So there's an increased pressure because they are no longer having access to as many shared spaces with their peers. I'm basically seeing an exacerbation of a lot of things that were already pre-existing for kids in this demographic, because they are very aware that there are a lot of systems that have not been serving them, and they're upset about it, they're angry about it, and they're sad about it.
Devin, I see you nodding your head. Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I completely agree that it seems to be just an exacerbation of what was already there in many ways. And it's been unfortunate to see that because I think, you know, LGBTQ youth struggle enough as it is, but with all of the added challenges of the pandemic, it's been really detrimental to a lot of people's mental health and in some ways physical health as well.
So let's turn to how the services that you offer are helping people. How does this work? You take calls yourself as well as coordinating the volunteers. Can you sort of run through us? How does a call work? How does someone calls, what happens?
Yeah, so one of the main things that we do at our hotline is offer what we call peer support. And essentially what that means is that all of our volunteers are part of the LGBTQ community themselves and are trained to handle an array of topics such as suicide, coming out, questioning gender or sexuality, relationships, family concerns, and so many other things. So when a caller reaches out to us, it's our job to ensure that our callers have an experience with the volunteers that is completely non-judgmental and supportive. We utilize a lot of active listening skills and really try to allow the callers to have a space, often for the first time, where they can feel truly validated and supported for being exactly who they are. We also don't give advice, so they don't feel pressured and can be free to kind of make their own choices once the call has ended.
Now, I know you can't give us any specific stories from calls for confidentiality reasons, even if you don't use someone's name. But can you give us some idea of what are the kind of recurring themes that come up when someone calls you in crisis?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're seeing a lot of the same sorts of things across the country. There's a lot of kind of threads of commonality. So many people who call our youth talk line believe that they're completely alone in their experience as an LGBTQ person. And it can be just so comforting to have them hear the simple fact that there are other people like them. And, you know, we hear so many concerns about things like being normal or worrying about what their future might hold for them if their family and friends don't accept them, or if things stay the way that they are when they're in, you know, high school, for example.
You mentioned that people have this feeling of isolation, which of course is true. And I think of that being more in rural areas, small states, small communities. But of course, I know it's also true in the Bay Area. And now with, you know, having to stay at home, how does that factor in? Rain and Mauro, maybe I'll turn to you on this. As you work with youth groups specifically here, and I suppose you can't meet right now, for example, Out Loud can't meet in person, and the Q groups, I want to know more about those too, Mauro. Let's start with you, Mauro. How, first of all, what's a Q group? How does that work? And what are you doing now to replace that since you can't meet in person?
So Q groups are basically small social emotional learning groups that are specifically tailored for LGBTQ plus youth in our middle schools and high schools across San Francisco. So not every single middle school and high school has them, but a good handful of them do. And most of what they serve as is, you know, as they're usually no more than, I'd say, about 5 to 12 students. We try to keep it to kind of like a smaller intimate space. The GSAs, you know, the Genders and Sexualities Alliances are more kind of like the social advocacy clubs, but the Q groups are a little bit more specialized in terms of focusing on young people who need that kind of affinity space to really talk about what's hard about being a queer or trans young person, but also, you know, not that the GSAs don't do that, but that's kind of the focus. And to also give, you know, specific tools around, you know, sexual health or identity or coming out or building community, you know, for those young people who are really needing those additional social and emotional supports. So those were happening in person through largely through the wellness centers that exist across San Francisco Unified. And they were being facilitated both by SFUSD personnel, but also by partners in community-based organizations, you know, like Lyric and Hi-Fi and Huckleberry. And the idea was that we would be bringing queer and trans adults who had some shared life experience to be working directly with queer and trans youth themselves. So I can confidently say that almost every single Q group, with the exception of maybe one or two who were run by incredibly supportive allies, most of them were run by LGBTQ plus adults. And that for me was really the primary purpose of it, is putting ourselves in front of young people so they can see what type of, you know, beautiful, meaningful, supportive adult life you can grow into as a young person. Like, hey, some of us made it through this rough patch and now we're paying it forward. And so in that transition to remote schooling, it was really hard. We did our best to relaunch Q groups virtually, you know, but there are all these barriers around, you know, being able to contact youth, you know, so the ways that contracts work, you know, CBO partners can't reach out directly to youth in this virtual format. So we had to have social workers reach out to young people and liaise between, you know, CBO partners and the young people themselves. And it was a really heavy lift also, because for the young people who are unsupported in their homes, we can't just call up and say, hey, this queer trans kiddo that you've got living in your household, they were participating in this confidential group that maybe you didn't know about or might harm them for participating in. Right. Where you put them on the phone with this queer trans adult so we can keep that going, you know? So there are layers of confidentiality.
Yes.
In San Francisco, you know, it's actually against the law to out a student. You know, so we had to come up with kind of coded ways to have social workers do kind of like veiled outreach, you know,
wow.
Do general wellness checks. You know, can I get your student on the phone and ask them if they want to continue participating in any groups, or if they would like to begin participating in any groups? You know, so it became this really circuitous process of just trying to get into a safe line of communication with young people who, for any number of reasons, might not want the people who they're living with to know that they self-identify as queer or trans or questioning.
Right, right.
So we were able to continue them virtually, but it was a much smaller number, and the logistics around it, like, it was four times the work for about, you know, a quarter of the participation.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Rain, similar for you. I know that, first of all, tell us a little bit about the program that you run at the Pacific Center, and what are you doing now to replace the fact that you can't meet in person?
Totally. So Out Loud Peer Youth Support is a peer support group with therapeutic adjunct, meaning that it is following the model of peer support groups that have been a long tradition at Pacific Center. But because we're working with minors, that's part of my job as the therapist is to do general mental health monitoring and be the point person for if anything crisis related comes up. And historically, Pacific Center has always met in person. That it's been a difficult transition to online because there wasn't the existing infrastructure or desire to have it. But we have now transitioned a good portion of our peer support groups online, including Out Loud. I've found that this has pluses and minuses because there are youth that we actually haven't seen before who were more able to access it because the group is online. We've also had some youth drop off, and we're, because this group is very optional, we don't, strictly speaking, have permission to do a lot of reach out with kids who are not attending for whatever reason. We've speculated that it has to do with access to technology from parents. And it's been an interesting challenge because when we're meeting in person, we have three or four different conversations running out at the same time. And with Zoom, you can't really do that. It comes off as crosstalk, and there can really be only one conversation running at any given time. We encourage them to use the chat to have side conversations if they want to, but it just isn't the same. And I'm seeing a lot more, probably because they're using the Zoom format for school as well, a lot more of like, no, I'm fine. Sort of check-ins when we're right. And when we kind of probe it, that it's like, are you though? And the answer is usually no, but I don't know how to talk about it right now.
Yeah. It sounds especially frustrating and kind of sad that people are leaving the group and you can't contact them to find out why or offer follow-up support. That must be extremely frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very frustrating.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Out in the Bay. My guests are Rain Bannock, an associate marriage and family therapist working in the East Bay who specializes in treating the LGBTQ+ community and works at the Pacific Center in Berkeley. Devin Green, volunteer coordinator for the GLBT National Help Center Youth Talk Line, and Mauro Cifuentes, LGBTQ programs coordinator at the San Francisco Unified School District. We're talking about the challenges, especially on queer youth right now during the COVID pandemic. For any younger listeners who may be in crisis and need a safe place to talk, grab a pen or your phone. Here are a couple of numbers. The LGBT National Youth Talk Line at 1-800-246-7743. That's 800-246-7743. And the Trevor Project at 1-866-488-7386. That's 866-488-7386. Both organizations also provide WISE to chat virtually or text, as well as talking by phone. I'll put links to their websites at outinthebay.org. It'll be at the end of the description for this week's show. Devin, I wanted to ask you, the Trevor Project reported this spring that its call volume nearly doubled as many young people started sheltering in place. And I'm curious to know if the LGBT National Youth Talk Line has also seen a similar spike in call volume or chat room participation.
Yeah, so we have definitely received an influx of calls since the beginning of the shelter in place orders across the country. I would say that this is particularly true for our one-on-one chats, which are conducted through Instant Messenger, and the group chat rooms as well. Considering the sudden lack of these in-person resources, not being out at home can prevent someone from feeling comfortable or safe to physically use their voice to make a call. And so typing can usually feel safer in that way.
I'm still kind of curious about how you are, if there's any more ways you want to expand on how you're reaching young people now that we're sheltering in place. And it looks like this is going to continue into the fall. Colleges and high schools won't be open in person. Any rays of hope out here? Mauro, please.
Yeah, one thing that we have tried to do, and I know that there are lots of other organizations and entities taking this approach is we've tried to create as many avenues into participating in virtual programs as possible. So if a young person is able to get on a video camera with audio and they can participate that way, awesome. If all they can do is, you know, plug in some headphones into their phone and log into a Zoom and just listen and maybe participate in the chat, we try to, you know, include them as much as possible. And if all they can do is chat, we try to make sure that, you know, they're engaged there as well. You know, so whether it's video, audio, or just text chat only, we try to make all the young people feel, you know, involved and included, just so that, you know, we're sort of respecting whatever kind of boundaries they're setting around their own safety and privacy needs based on where they're sheltering in place. And we're also trying to work a lot with, you know, teachers and other personnel who might be in more regular contact with young people to, you know, put the messaging out there around how to reach out to us at sort of the central district offices for additional support. So just educating the adults that are in more regular contact about how to keep putting out information about the support services that exist at the district level.
How are you doing with volunteers? This is for all of you. Volunteers and resources. I mean, I know that we just did a segment last week about how nonprofits across the board are strained right now because demand for services is up and donations are probably down as people feel the economic pinch. Rain, please.
Yeah, we're definitely having problems with that. Mostly because we need to provide these services for free to increase access to kids who otherwise wouldn't have access to the space. We're actually short not only volunteers, but staff, where we're trying to launch a BIPOC-specific queer youth group that we had running for a while, and we lost that person. So we're not only short on volunteers, but we're short on staff, and it is reflecting in our ability to offer programming, especially offering specific support to BIPOC youth, Black and Indigenous people of color, who absolutely need their own affinity space at this point with everything that's going on.
Thank you. Mauro or Devin, your thoughts on this? Are you having more trouble or less getting volunteers or resources, other resources that nonprofits would normally provide? Mauro, go ahead.
Yeah, so largely, like, youth work is not the most well-compensated work, and it's often, you know, somewhat precarious, and there are also lots of younger people. One of the things that is, I think, pretty common across different kinds of entities that serve youth is that most of the folks who work specifically with queer and trans youth, LGBTQ plus youth, however you describe that, are also LGBTQ plus themselves. And we also know that lots of LGBTQ plus adults are being hardest hit by the pandemic and all the different forms of, you know, social and economic and housing precarity that are popping off. So, you know, we are seeing sort of a reduction in our workforce to be able to serve LGBTQ youth, either because people are having to relocate out of big cities where a lot of these nonprofits are housed, or people are leaving jobs or getting laid off, or, you know, all the dynamics that, it's trickling down and it's affecting our capacity to serve the youth. You know, people can't come in to volunteer, and we have just fewer staff members in general available to us in our community partners to continue these programs. So everyone who is still on the front lines, so to speak, is stretched even more thin than before. So it's tough times, but, you know, just trying to, and I also think we're not going to learn the full scope of the impacts of this pandemic until this moment, cross our fingers, when it's over, unfortunately.
Yeah, whenever that is. And this moment is stretching longer and longer. We are getting close to the end of our time. So I want to ask all of you if you have any particular final words for our listeners. And where can our youth find help? Resources, phone numbers you want to give out, anything like that? Devin, why don't we start with you? Tell us just a brief closing thing about the National LGBTQ Talk Line, and specifically the one for youth, and give the numbers, please.
Yeah, so if youth have access to the internet, you know, we do have our youth group chat rooms. We can also connect them with resources such as even things like books and media, and also local and national groups whenever possible. But even if they only have a phone, our hotline is still available to help. So our National Youth Talk Line can be reached at 800-246-7743.
800-246-7743. That's for the LGBT National Youth Talk Line. And I will have these numbers on our website. We'll also have links on our website. Rain?
So just closing thoughts. My experience with youth in the pandemic so far is that most of what they need is to be validated that what they're going through is not okay, and that this is not normal, and they're not any sort of abnormal way for reacting to it the way that they are. I wanted to list off some of the groups that are available through Pacific Center, again, pending an internet connection. Not necessarily a camera. We're totally okay if people come on with no camera and just participate in the chat. There are actually two Out Loud youth groups that meet, one on Tuesdays from 4 to 6 and one on Fridays from 4 to 6. We also have a program for both trans tweens, so ages 9 to 12. There's a concurrent support group for parents and caregivers of trans youth at the same time, the first and third Saturday from 10 a.m. to noon. We also have a program for folks that are a little bit older, transitional age youth from age 18 to 26, called Real Queer, Rainbows Entering Adulthood Lovingly. Second and fourth Fridays from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. And all the info for those is available on the Pacific Center website. That's pacificcenter.org. I also, because access to therapy has been an issue because of cost, I wanted to note this service called openpathcollective.org, which is a collective of therapists offering sliding scale therapy between $30 and $60 per session, which may be more accessible than some of the more private practice models and potentially easier to find somebody than through insurance.
Great. Mauro Cifuentes, you get to close out. Parents and kids, how can they get in touch with school district support?
The most direct way to get district support is to email lgbtq@sfusd.edu. We didn't try to make it rhyme and sound really catchy, but it's just as simple as that. That will send an email directly to myself and two other people who focus on LGBTQ programs in the district. You know, to the young people out there, I would, anyone listening who's a younger person or a student, just know that the adults are trying to reach you, that we're here, and that there are many of us sort of scrambling to figure out how to navigate this new terrain, and that, you know, we're here to hold down as much hopefulness as we can. But I also want to recognize that, you know, LGBTQ plus communities have, you know, intergenerational wisdom around coping with loss and grief. You know, from the AIDS pandemic to the current COVID pandemic, you know, there's a lot of wealth of wisdom. And, you know, as much as we can, you know, connect people intergenerationally right now, but then even more so once we come out of this moment, to make sure that people have the resources and the support that they need to not live ongoingly with the pains and the wounds that people are going to accrue in this moment. So we're going to do our best to mitigate that right now. And we're also going to ready ourselves for what things look like once we're able to be back together and, you know, healing together.
Very good. Thank you very much. I'm going to just get those numbers one more time for anybody who needs to call. The LGBT National Youth Talk Line is 1-800-246-7743. The Trevor Project is 866-488-7386. And we will have those links to those organizations on our site. Thanks again so much for being here. My guests today have been Rain Bannock, an associate marriage and family therapist working in the East Bay who specializes in treating the LGBTQ plus community. Devin Green, volunteer coordinator for the GLBT National Health Center Youth Talk Line. And Mauro Cifuentes, LGBTQ programs coordinator at the San Francisco Unified School District. Thank you all for being here. For links to more information on the organizations, topics, and resources mentioned in our conversation, please see our website, outinthebay.org, where you can also hear this program again, as well as past shows. While you're there, please sign up for our e-news and subscribe to our podcast, outinthebay.org. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for a future show, find us on Facebook and on Twitter and Instagram at outinthebaysf, or write to us, outinthebaysf@gmail.com. Today's show is produced by Kendra Klang. Our theme music was written and performed by Holly Mead. Big thank you to KSFP for bringing Out of the Bay back on the air. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening, and take good care.